What's going on here? Yesterday I had a big crowd. Today I see already Baruch Hashem. Imani kan hakol kan. Let's wait one second. They just shut down another Syrian plane, a coalition plane, Daesh. They have another pilot they just captured.
Which country?
They don't say it. And Moshe Leon, can you believe your ears? To be mayor of Jerusalem, either you have to be a billionaire like Barkat, or you have to be a thief. Kolek, Lupiansky, Leon wanted to be mayor. Do you follow what's going on in Shas with the toilet? It's beyond words. If someone wrote a novel, you would say, nah, this has no... can't be real, you know. Novel has to have some connection to reality. We are getting our taxpayers' money's worth of entertainment. I can't believe it. And now the question is, what did he mean by the toilet? There's a whole pilpul. And they say he means Rav Mazuz. And Shabbos, I was together with Rav Mazuz's right-hand man. Rough guy. Big, strong, big beard. Big black hat. Rough guy. But it's Sioni Dati, you know, it's unbelievable. All right, let's get started. Baruch Hashem, it's December 29th, 2014. And I welcome my students sitting in front of me and all those listening across the wide expanse of the universe. Yesterday we had guests from Australia who are regular students. I just want to comment. I mentioned in class, I think it was in the other class, but I trust people will pick it up, the whole concept of being overwhelmed by tragedy and trying to bend the halacha to solve a tragic problem. We have many examples, but the example we were talking about was Rav Judah Lovitch, who came to America in the early 1900s and was a prominent rav in New York, a Gaon Adir. He was in Boston, New York. He was involved in Machleket with the Kashrut. I mentioned all the sources. A doctorate was done in Columbia University, Fraud, Corruption, and Holiness by Hal Gatzworth. And he was involved in the big Machleket in New York. It was Margolis versus Margolis. Ramaz was on one hand, the Agudas Rabbanim people, and then there was another organization led by Rav Gavriel Zev Margolis. And the Rav Yudel Lovitch was with the second Margolis. And there was a case, I don't go into great detail, but a very sad case of a woman who was in America, needed chalitza from her brother in Russia. In no way could she go back to Russia. He describes the circumstances here. She didn't have money to pay for a ticket. In addition to not having money to pay for a ticket, if she went back to Russia, she'd be arrested because she left the country illegally to come to America. It's an unbelievable story here. And Rav Yudel Lovitch comes up with a proposal that she should make a shlicha to take off the man's shoe and spit in front of his face. Now, what can I tell you? If you just open up a chumash, you'll see... it's like putting on tefillin. Can you make a shliach to put on tefillin? A woman is busy. She wants to make a shlicha to go to mikveh for her. Can a woman make a shlicha to go to mikveh for her? It's a chovat gavra. So he comes up with a chiddush, which I'm even ashamed to say over, but he says the chovat gavra is on the man, not on the woman. The woman can make a shlicha. Someone in Europe corresponds with him that let her hire the shlicha as a poelet, and therefore she's not a shaliach, she's a poelet, she works for him. It's beyond words. And they should do it over the telephone, and he calls it a radio, but I imagine he means the telephone. Anyway, the Gedolei Yisrael of the generation were totally opposed to Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. Others, the ragged shava rips the floor with him, but the kinereh at gehalten bazich, which is in Chinese, it means he held his ground. So I just want to say, I want to thank Morty Tarrigan very much. He went to Hebrew books, right? Came up with the Resh Sefer. It turns out he owns the other part of his publications on Chumash, an inheritance from your grandfather, right? So he has the set. By the way, it was printed on beautiful paper. Did you notice, for something close to 100 years old, the paper was absolutely excellent. But I just want to go on record that the situation is tragic, but this is not a solution. I also want to let off a little steam. Rabbi Yitzchak Frankfurter in Ami magazine, which is not exactly deserves a prize for its open-mindedness to the various blends of Torah Hashem that we have in this world, Kanayin Hara. I just heard from a grandson that he's not too happy in his yeshiva. He says they're very cynical. I said, that's because it's Litvish. I know the place. It's Litvish in origins. I told him how I grew up when I told the Reb Noach Kornstein I went to Chabad for Shabbos. Had I told him I went to a Buddhist temple, I think he would have been happier. But anyway, my Talmud, Rabbi Steve Przanski, came out with a volume on taking responsibility. I talk about it again. I don't know if I remember Sunday. Monday, Rabbi Dr. Shalom Gold gives a haskama to the book. Baruch Hashem, I gave haskama too, but evidently I wrote nothing that Rabbi Frankfurter felt like eating up a good Frankfurter with sauerkraut and mustard. And he rips the heck out of Rabbi Przanski and mainly Rabbi Gold, because he writes, transferring decision-making to others means relinquishing the essence of one's humanity, which calls upon us to exercise the divine gift of free will in an intelligent and responsible way. And he takes this as meaning, which of course Rabbi Przanski and Rabbi Gold are not in the Das Torah camp. And he takes this as meaning a desecration of Das Torah. I can't believe the article he wrote. But anyway, let me go on record that I'm in the camp of my dear friend Rabbi Shalom Gold, with whom I had a big machlokes a few years ago on Yom HaTzmut. We had a convocation of Rabbanim in a backyard right across the street from Sharansky's house, and we were feasting, wining, and dining Yom HaTzmut. I remember I was in Avela. There was a problem of how much I could go, how much I could participate. Yesterday was my mother's yard site, so it's mamish 3 years ago. And 2.5 years ago, it's Yom HaTzmut is in May. And I remember then I spoke and he spoke and we had a tremendous battle, because I claimed that Satmar Hasidim are our best reservoir for future Jews, that we have to be Makariv them to Yiddishkeit. But at least there's something there. Shabbat is there, Kashrut is there, all right? We have to bring them to Pashat Lech Lecha. But he claims, Satmar Hasidim, oh boy, I don't want to repeat his attitude towards them. So we had a big debate. But on this particular issue, I come down on the side of, welcome, come in. I come down on the side of Rabbi Shalom Gold and my dear student, Rabbi Steve Przanski. Finally, on our Shirman, Rabbi David Lifshitz, so I mentioned the Piyut Odelekel, V'vron Yachad Toch V'Boka. And I mentioned that I saw it in the Beit Yaakov Siddur, Rabbi Yaakov Emden Siddur. And my dear student, Rabbi Yehoshua Grinstein, who heads up the Rabbinic Foreign Rabbis Program, the place rabbis all over the world for Rabbi Riskin. So he writes to me that when I mentioned it, it brought back memories. They used to sing it in lunch for Taretzion, and on Facebook he clued me in to Rav Amital singing it, and it's very moving. And he says the Mechaber of the Piyut is Reb Shimon Kuson, who lived in North Africa in the 16th century. His name is in the Rashi Tevat, Rashi Batim of the song. Not much I could find on him. Okay, with that I've caught up on all my comments on Pesach Shiurim, and I'm ready to go. So, last week we spoke about Reb David Lifshitz, was brought, 2 weeks ago I should say, Reb David Lifshitz was brought into the yeshiva by Reb Shmuel Belkin, and Reb David Lifshitz, the Rav was the mind of the yeshiva, I would say. Reb David was the heart, was the spirit. The Rav was the intellect, was the Rav. I'm very moved, R.C. The OU is now selling a collection of the Rav's books, and yours truly, and I see him on the same line with the Rav. I'm blown away. But he was the mind, the intellect. Rav David was the heart. We spoke about the son-in-law, Rav David, Rav Nassim Kamenetsky, and all that went on with the book, The Making of a Gadol. And this is a comment on modern times, if we can get involved in a whole machloket over the toilet and what's going on the websites now and in the Haredi press. So you can see a letter comes in from Zalek Epstein, and that letter is never shown to Rav Eliashiv. And anyone who's a Ben Torah, this just has to shock you. It's just intellectual dishonesty of the highest order. But this was Rav Shmuel Belkin, and he brought in as many people as he could to strengthen the yeshiva, to enlighten the yeshiva, to keep the yeshiva litvish. And we still have to come back to the Mashgiach, but I'll leave that for later. As we said last week, Rav Shmuel Belkin, the last years of his life are filled with tension, heartache. The financial problems are overwhelming. The yeshiva is practically foreclosed. And it's sad. It's sad the way everything comes to a conclusion. And ultimately, this Grist campus comes about during this very dark period. Who knows, in the long run, it may be the greatest light of Yeshiva University, but time will tell. What I want to do now is become very personal and talk about my own relationship with Rav Shmuel Belkin. And I want to show you why I describe Rabbi Belkin the way I do. I want to analyze certain incidents that happened. I may be right, I may be wrong. I hope that future historians will listen to this particular shiur and they can agree with me or disagree. At the time that I came into the yeshiva in the 50s, Rabbi Belkin slowly but surely became a more distant figure. Fortunately or unfortunately, we've spoken about it, the demands of the yeshiva, the financial demands, the meeting with people, the construction of the yeshiva, the building of the university, all this took more and more of his time. And Rabbi Belkin became, I would say, more distant. When he took over the presidency, he was a sun. Shortly, he became a moon. By the late 50s into the 60s, he already was no more than a distant star, and most students really did not know Dr. Belkin. The story that Rabbi Riskin tells, where Rabbi Belkin is in the elevator with that student, and he says to the student, "Do you know who I am?" And the student says, "You look familiar, but I don't know who you are." And Rabbi Belkin turns away and cries, is a very accurate commentary on the man. The great achievement, but the heartache that he no longer was a Rebbe, no longer a Malamed. If you recall a letter I read to you months ago when I first began talking about Rav Shmuel Belkin, how a Talmud writes to him, "Dear Rebbe," and Rabbi Belkin writes back, how moved, and this is published, of course, how moved he was that they see the word Rebbe again, and how unfortunately he doesn't have Talmidim anymore. Now, when I learned in Lakewood, I met a very interesting individual, the Mashgiach of Lakewood, Rav Nassim Wachtvogel. He's called the Elter Mashgiach today, the older Mashgiach. I knew him yet as a young man, basically, and had a very fascinating relationship with Rav Nassim. I later found out that Rabbi Aaron Cutler, and please take it, I don't want to talk about myself, but it's just important to understand this. Rabbi Aaron Cutler told Rav Nassim Wachtvogel that he wants Rothkopf to remain in the yeshiva. I shouldn't go on to YU, I shouldn't go elsewhere. So Rav Nassim became very close to me and started telling me stories about the yeshiva, when he was in the yeshiva, when he was a student in the yeshiva. And Rav Nassim told me about Rav Shmuel Belkin. how he came in 1928, 1929. I think he arrived in America in 28, but he enters the yeshiva in, actually in 29, because first he goes to Canada, then where he had his cousin, then he comes back to America, or his sister was in Canada at the time. I had the details. I gave them to you. When I gave it to you, it was correct, because I was working from recorded material. And he comes back to the yeshiva, and he learns Bechavruta with Reb Nosson Bachfogel. And Reb Nosson teaches him English, and in return, he teaches Reb Nosson Gemara. So you see already, Rav Shmuel Belkin was an Ilui Shebi Iluyim. He came to America 17 years of age. I don't know if he was bucking in Kol HaShas Kulo, but in the Yeshiva Shemesechtot, he was bucking Malei V'Gadosh. He learned English slowly, and unfortunately, as you know, ultimately there was a terrible schism. Rav Nosson Bachfogel goes on to Lakewood, and Rav Shmuel Belkin, of course, goes on to build Yeshiva University, and neither do the two meet. But that story itself, fascinating. But later in yeshiva, and I'm not necessarily going in chronological important in chronological order here, but I want to develop an idea. Later in yeshiva, I'm working on my doctorate. And Minishamayim Zikuni, as I've told you more than once, or I've mentioned over the decades, I wanted to write on the Netziva V'Lashon Eli. That was what I was interested in. And I came into Bernie Lander, and Bernie Lander looks at me and tells me, I got to consult with the faculty. I come back 2 weeks later, and he says, Arnold, we want you to forget about the Netziv. We have a project. We've been waiting to find the proper young man, and maybe you can handle it. And it's Dr. Belkin, Rabbi Dr. Bernard. Excuse me, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Reffel. And I sets up an appointment with Rabbi Reffel's widow. I go to meet Sarah Reffel, and the rest is history. Of course, today when you look back so many years later, more than half a century later, and it's laughable, because if we knew what I know today, I could have never been assigned a doctorate on Rabbi Reffel. It turns out I was writing about my own cousin. And I only found that out maybe 2-3 years ago. I write an introduction to Eichler, maybe it's 3-4 years ago. I only found that out, Kaliachayad, walking through Geula, going to look at the latest volumes that came out, and I see this volume, Yashar Yisrani, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Gibraltar. I contact him, work with him, talk with him, put it all together, and it comes out my mother was right. Her mother's family was Hazei Oklikit, and so Frum, and so this and that. And I always listened with one ear, because I know what the heck happened to that family in America. And it turns out that the Kalvariski family is both my family and Dr. Revel's family. So today I could have never written on Dr. Revel. But okay, at that time we didn't know anything. I go to work, I do my job. And in a way, I have to give credit to Rabbi Lander that he picked the right person, meaning I learned by the Rav, a little bit I knew how to learn, and I was in Bernard Revel graduate school, so I had a little bit of the breitkeit, the broadness of Chochmat Yisrael. And you needed someone like that to work on Rabbi Revel, because Rabbi Revel too was a Litvish Ilui, who got the first PhD from Drapsi College. Fine. Now, I get my doctorate in Six-Day War, and the whole world changes, and my Das Torah disappears, because had I asked the Rav, should I go in Aliyah, the Rav would have said to me, 100% not. That was the Rav's viewpoint, that was the Lubavitcher Rebbe's viewpoint. If you were doing things in America and you knew the mentality, stay where you are. If anyone asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I give you an example, Rabbi Leibu Green from Canada. When he asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe, should he go on Aliyah? The answer was absolutely not. You follow? You're doing? Stay. But I don't live with Das Teira, Baruch Hashem. I have a mind of my own. I'm a Jew, and I'm created in God's image, and I have to think, and I'm a responsible person, and I have a wife. I just had to order a new cylinder. So Malka tells me, oh, she doesn't want the color of the keys to be pink. So I called the guys. I said, this is a guy. We had a good laugh. I say, Ani anus tachat dibura. You follow? And I played on a plate on the anus tachat dibura. I said, my wife wants to be sure. She says to me, it's black. It comes all black. It's from Yale, the Yale locks. They're black. I said, fine. My wife, b'diavad, will accept black. La'chatchila, she wants tchelet, red. Black is a b'diavad, but pink, varod, is out. So, what can I tell you? Manus tachat ha-dibur, we're now getting ready to go on Aliyah. And I've told this story more than once, but I want to analyze the story now. So now, I'm going in Aliyah, and I have a contract with JPS for Bernard Reffel. And I realized this book is going to be published. I have to revise it. I revised it in Israel. I worked on it a number of years here. But I realized it's going to be published. At least there's a chance. I have a contract. I've gotten money already in advance on, I think it's called an advance on royalties. And I had two documents that I said, you know, it's not nice if I publish this without getting permission. One was a letter the Rav wrote to Rabbi Reffel from Berlin, a four-page letter in Hebrew, which I translated the part I wanted to quote into English. And the other was a letter that Rabbi Belkin wrote to Rabbi Reffel about his concept of a graduate school. Rabbi Reffel wants to organize this graduate school of Semitic studies, which today is Bernard Reffel. We're talking about 1935. We spoke about this already this year, last year. And he wants Rabbi Belkin to head it up. And Rabbi Belkin writes a magnificent letter describing the difference between yeshivish study and graduate school study. And I go to the Rav and I show Rabbi a photograph, a Xerox, primitive Xerox at that time. Did they use the word Xerox yet in the mid-60s? No, I don't know. Whatever it was. So, whatever it was called. What was it called? Does anyone...
Photostat?
A photostat could be. So I showed it to Mori Urebi, and, you know, I'm shaking, I'm trembling. These are my rebbeim. I'm a kid again. So I showed it to Rebbe, and I say to Rebbe, do you think I can... publish this? And the Rav looks at that, he says, I'll tell you, I wouldn't write a letter like this today, but what can I do? Chatimat chatsimas yodai me'idalai kameya edim. It's my handwriting. I wrote it. Do what you wish with it. Rabbi Belkin, I get an appointment, I come in, and you'll see I had a very nice relationship with the reasons why, but I show him, I said, Dr. Belkin, I'd like to publish this letter. It's, it's in my doctorate. He looks, he says, I'll tell you what to do. Don't publish the letter like a letter. Lose it in the paragraph. Okay, I wrote it. I don't want it. You'll write, you'll lose it in the idea you'll take out, but it won't be my letter. And that's what I did. You'll look at Reffel, and Jason, am I right? Jason, you'll look at Reffel and you'll see there I fudged it. You'll look at Washington, the chapter on Bernard Reffel Graduate School, written the face 50 years later. I was a very bad boy. I published the letter, because it's fabulous. But what do you see from this? And anyone, that's a bad boy, because I don't have permission. All right, but 50 years later, what can I do? I made a decision to publish it. It shouldn't be lost for posterity. It's the most fabulous letter I ever saw from a yeshivish person explaining what Talmud Torah is and what scientific Jewish scholarship is. Now, what do you...
Why wouldn't they want it published?
You'll understand in a minute. Why wouldn't Rabbi Belkin want it published? So you see, what do you see from this story? And this is the, until now I've given you the facts, okay? These are the facts. Now, I want to give the interpretation, as I understand it. The Rav was integrated. You never felt tension. All right, he was a Litvish, he was a Brisk, he was this, he was that, but he was a very broad person. And you felt the integration. In other words, it wasn't that he was one person in the Shir and another person in the Saturday Night Talk in Boston on the Pasha. And when he spoke in public, not the Shir was Brisk, but when he spoke in public, he could bring in math, he could bring in physics, he could bring in literature, world literature, Russian literature, he could bring in philosophy, speaking. Yeah, I don't have to tell you, his son-in-law, Professor Tversky, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, Isidore Tversky, it's the Tversky Tolna Rebbe / Harvard University professor, gave a talk on what was the Shloshim, I think it was later published in Tradition, where he cites all the non-rabbinic sources that the Rav quoted in some of his published writings. And it was integrated. You never felt any conflict whatsoever. The Rav became a Bostonian, became an American, it became, as Tova Lichtenstein once used the word, my father became a Brahmin. That in the look it up in the unabridged international Webster's dictionary, it's someone who believes this is the greatest, this is the best. He loved America. He loved New England. He loved Boston. He was totally at ease. Brisk and Boston merged in his personality. Rev Shmuel Belkin, and now you'll understand, I always felt there was a schizophrenia in the positive sense. On one hand, he was the Litvish yeshiva boy who never left Litva. The Chofetz Chaim, Raten, Reb Shimon Shkop, his rebellion, Grodno, it was a living reality for him. And then, moments later, he became a world-class president of Yeshiva University, a man that took a little yeshiva with a small high school and a small college and built it into a university. A man that could get Albert Einstein to sit with him and laugh with him and tell jokes to each other and get Albert Einstein to lend his name to the medical school. You have no idea what that did for yeshiva. It's just a shame that so many years later, it's now a burden to the yeshiva, a financial burden. It's a shame, it's a shame. It shouldn't be. There are enough wealthy Jews in the world. This is a good cause. But all right, there's rival, you understand. The Haredi billionaires are not going to give to YU. And there are billionaires in our world who feel that Israel is the future and they don't want to bury their money in America. They bury it, Baruch Hashem, l'kavod l'tiferet, in the state of Israel. So YU has it's limited the billionaires they can turn to. But if any of them are listening to me, and I know some are, halavai, put yeshiva into the black in the full sense of the word. Let the kippot be red, but let the yeshiva be black, playing on what we spoke about Rabbi Belkin. So, you see, this explains Rabbi Belkin, and at that moment, he looks at the letter. Oh boy, this is a letter I wrote, getting my PhD, this is Chochmat Yisrael, this is Wissenschaft, but I don't want Reb Shimon Shkop to see this letter. I don't want the Chofetz Chaim to see this letter. I don't want that type of thinking, people, scholars, Rabbanim, Reshi Yeshiva. I don't want them to see the letter. Lose it. I don't want them. I don't want to lose my basic image. I'm a Litvish Yeshiva Bacha. And this is what I derived from that little incident, but I can show it more. But I always felt that way. The Rav, you felt the integration. Whether the Rav totally believed in integration is a different story. I deal with it in the second volume of my Baruch Hashem, my work on the Rav, the world of, etc. But with Rabbi Belkin, I felt there was a certain dichotomy in his personality. It was the Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva who never stopped being that Litvisha Yeshiva Bacha, and then there was more at times, but I didn't feel that same harmonious existence that I felt with the Rav. And this is a classic example that I just told you. Eli, you got me now? You read me?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is one little story. The letter appears on page 131 in the Washington to Washington volume. You can see the letter there. It's fabulous. Okay. Now, let me go further. And you'll see the Hashgacha Pratit here, how certain things happen, and you don't realize how it affects eternity. It's what I spoke about yesterday. I mentioned with my mother that I repeat it again for those of you that weren't here yesterday, but my mother made one little decision back in the early 40s that ultimately affected tens of thousands of lives. One little decision. My parents were born in Harlem, a typical American family on my father's side, my mother's side, immigrants, 1900, four grandparents came over, teenagers, 16, 17, all of them married in America. My grandfather, my father's father, stayed in America by accident. He was very unhappy in America. And there's literature on this, by the way. Research has been done. People who went back, and he was homesick for his parents, and he saved up enough money to book passage to go back to Europe. And about a week before, he got a telegram from his parents not to come because Fanya, the Tsar, has drafted you for the army. It was before the Russo-Japanese War, or during the Russo-Japanese War, 1903, 1904 perhaps. And he stayed in America because of that reason. And thank God, that's why we're alive, that's why we're here. But I wound up in public school, of course, and at the end of 1 year, the teacher tells my mother that I'm too smart, she says. It was a Jewish teacher, Mr. Ray, I still remember the name. And she tells my mother that, you know, there are Irish kids here, Italian kids, and your son learns in a half hour what takes them 5 hours, and that your son is always busy fighting and not behaving. He needs a dual curriculum, she says. And there is one school not far from here where he can have a dual curriculum. That was Yeshiva Parochial School, Yeshiva Salanta. And I wind up in Salanta, and the rest is history, and my brothers, and my brother has done great things as well in Israel, Dr. Rothkopf, etc. So you see, a little decision. So now I come to the night of my wedding. So our minig was, I don't see it today anymore, the world has changed. Our minig was that after the ketubah was finished, and the man made all his commitments to his wife-to-be, he gave a Devat Torah. When the Rav sat there, Avram, you couldn't cut the person off. The Rav didn't allow it. He felt it was a Chilul Hashem of the Great Torah. So I spoke for 22 minutes. I never got my notes back. I was getting married. I was a little fatumult, so my notes were left on the table, and someone took them, walked off with them. I never got my notes back. I spoke for 22 minutes. No big deal. I spoke for 22 minutes. When I finished speaking, and I don't, by the way, I don't say this line. I've told you this because I said no one will believe me. So in the book, I just say the Rav embraced me. The Rav actually kissed me. Heshi, Rabbi Shechter will testify to it. And I didn't pay attention. All right, the Rav kissed me. He hugged me. He thanked me. He was as given ibigarasht. How do you say that in English? I don't know. Yitzchak, ibigarasht. You got it?
Overwhelmed.
Okay, good. Morty, good. We agree. Three scholars who don't know Yiddish just agreed. In the garage, he was overwhelmed. So I didn't pay attention. During the Sheva Brachas, I get a note, Mr. Abrams wants to see me. Mr. Abrams was like God. He ran the yeshiva with Biyad Chazakah. This was not a manby-pamby. He was all of 4'10", 4'11". He would stay, every door of every classroom had a little window in it, and he would stand on his toes and look in, and Shem Yirachem, if he saw you misbehaving, you are suspended indefinitely for 2 weeks, bring your mother, your father, one of your parents. And this was Mr. Abrams. He calls me in, he says, Arnold, I'm giving it to you word by word, Arnold, I never saw that. I saw at your wedding, I told Dr. Belkin about it. I said, Mr. Davis, what are you referring to? He said, you spoke and the Rav hugged you, embraced you. Dr. Belkin says, when we have our next opening for Rosh Yeshiva, I will appoint it. Arnold, I have never seen Rabbi Soloveitchik so emotional with a student. He embraced you with such warmth when you finished the learned words of Torah. I told Dr. Belkin about it. We agreed that when there will be the next opening for Rosh Yeshiva, you will be appointed to the yeshiva's faculty. Okay. No, people make a promise. Go and cash in the promise. Going to the rabbinate, there was no kollel then. Either you knew how to learn by 23 or forget it. So I'm kicked out of the yeshiva, kicked into the rabbinate. And as you know, I had a very difficult first year in the rabbinate. Without going into detail now, it could have destroyed me or made me. So, Baruch Hashem, it helped me. I don't want to say it made me, but it helped me. It's a very difficult year. And I'm 23 years of age, you know, there's no maturity, and I didn't have Rebbeim like you have, who give you some life insight. It was a different world, and I went crying to the Rav, and I write about this in Washington. The Rav said to me, he quoted Rav Chaim, I'll say it in English, the Rav said it to me in Yiddish, a rabbi whom the city doesn't want to throw out is not a rabbi. And if the rabbi lets himself be thrown out, as nishta mensch, he's not a man. So either way, I was losing.
When was the shiur in English?
Shurim, the world came to an end in 1960, September of 1960. The Rebbe was sitting where I am, I was sitting right here, and a guy named Danny Greer came over to the Rebbe and just said, I graduated Princeton, and you are withholding Torah from us. And the Rav, what do you mean? I didn't know that Danny Greer knew the Rav. We looked at him. How do you speak to the Rav that way? And he said, I don't understand Yiddish. He was Egyptian, Danny. And you're teaching in Yiddish. And the Rav said, okay, tomorrow the shiur will be in English, and I'm going to give you Abachina. That was the end of Torah in America. From that day on, the Rav taught in English. You follow? You become, your son is a Kli Shlishi. I'm a Kli Sheni. So, Baruch Hashem.
He's a second generation American.
No, he can be a second generation, but when it comes, he's learning from me now. I'm a klisheni. He's a klishlishi. Okay? If I'm geret Yiddish, then I would already be a klirishon today. I can Yiddish, as they are good. Good, but I gotta stick to Mama Lashon, which is English, so everyone will understand me. Anyway, in the middle of all my aggravation, and I'm re-elected by a vote of 9-7, I forget already, Charlie Liebman, Professor Liebman, Zichrono Levracha, you can ask me, I can give you copies of the article, did an article, and I made him famous. It was his first article, and where it says young rabbi at the back, it put in, cross out young rabbi, put in Aaron Rothkopf. He analyzes the 9 people who voted for me and the 7 people who voted against me. Excellent article. And in the middle of all this, I get a telegram. There was no fax machine and there was no email yet. I get a telegram from Mr. Abrams, Rabbi Belkin. I look into Washington. I give you the exact date. I got the telegram. Rabbi Belkin wants to see you. This was Thursday, Monday morning, 10 o'clock. I make the big trip from Philadelphia to New York. I come into Mr. Abrams' office, and he immediately takes me next door to Dr. Belkin, and Dr. Belkin says, Mazel Tov, I'm appointing you a Rosh Yeshiva, takes out a bottle of Flaschel Branfen, we drink a L'chaim, and it's fascinating. And he says to me, listen to these words, And I hear these words again 10 years later. He says to me, I'll explain in a minute. He says to me, but I want you to know, he says, Rabbi Rotkopf, I can shake any, I'm quoting word by word, I'm living it. I can shake any building in Washington Heights and I'll get Rashi Yeshiva. I need Rashi Yeshiva who can also be practicing rabbis. And I know you had difficulty, but we have confidence in you that you can be a good practicing rabbi. So I want you, you teaching the yeshiva, but I want to get you a shtela within commuting distance. And with that, Rabbi Belkin picks up a phone. It asks Helen Atlas, his secretary, right hand, his girl Friday, get me the community service division. And a minute later, Rabbi Belkin is talking to Vic Geller and telling him, find Rothkopf a shtela within commuting distance of the yeshiva. And that's how I wind up in Maplewood, South Orange, first Orthodox rabbi of a first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County. The rest is history, as they say. 10 years later, I've come in Aliyah, and I'm sitting and talking with Rabbi Yehuda Koopman, Yukel Koopman. And I couldn't believe my ears. Koopman says to me, I need something special from you. To get Rabbanim who know how to learn in Oshas and Paiskim, I can shake any building in Bayit Vagan and get people like this. But you have a doctorate, combine the two. Give me an idea for a course in responsive literature. Within 48 hours, I gave him a syllabus. I can't go into more detail now. Those courses became Evan HaYesod of postgraduate work, of advanced study at Michlala. Rabbi Shach put me into Cheirim, in the famous Cheirim against the Michlala. I think I got Shlishi. Rabbi Koopman was Rishon. Rabbi Breuer was Shani, and I was Shlishi. Women have to know this. You know, he went through the catalog. No, the names, he mentions the courses, you know, right away he was talking about. He says about Rabbi Koopman, who says they'll believe that he taught Bikorat HaMikra, how to refute? Who says they'll believe the refutation? They will believe the Bikorat. Rabbi Breuer was altogether an apikoros the way he relates to Tanakh, you understand, with the edited edition, with the words, with the, oh, don't ask, and Rothkopf at the time, Rakefet, whatever name they were using, women have to know this, I have the Cheirim in my possession, it's fabulous. So it was unbelievable, I heard the exact same words, but you see, it also reveals Reb Shmuel Belkin, another part of his personality. He recognized very well that Baruch Hashem, we did have Talmidei Chachamim in America, Washington Heights. You know, the Heights was divided in half. There was Yeki land and YU land. Rarely did the two meet. I mean, you got to remember, Charlie Hexter is the exception rather than the rule. Am I right or wrong? How many kids went from, where did you go, to Breuer's Elementary? How many kids went from Breuer's to MTA? Am I right or wrong? I don't know. In your time, you were the only one. I have a son-in-law who also went from Breuer's to ultimately graduated MTA, left Breuer's in high school. It was rare. There was Johnny Prager, but he already lived in the Bronx. He was a Yekka, but he wasn't. Do you know the name Jonas Prager, Professor Prager, my classmate, Johnny Prager, great guy. We went to school 8 years together, high school, college. But he lived in the Bronx, if I'm not mistaken. But I remember this. I'll tell you something. I'll never forget. I'm living it as I tell it to you. We came out of yeshiva. Has to be about 57, I would say 58. We're standing outside the yeshiva on Amsterdam Avenue, and we're talking with the Rav. And, you know, we're talking with the Rav. Jason, we're shaking. This isn't talking with Alan. This is talking with the Rav. We're shaking. We're talking with our Rebbe. And a man with a Van Dyke, just like the Rav, comes over to the Rav, and he says, excuse me, would you know how to get to Breuer's? And the Rav says, no, I don't know. And we finished talking to the Rav. We ran around the corner got hold of the guy, and we said, do you know who you just spoke to? He said, no. I said, that's Rabbi Soloveitchik. The guy looks at us. I said, we'll show you how to get to Breuer's. We knew how, because the subway was there. But could you imagine the Rebbe standing on Amsterdam Avenue, and a Jew, obviously a Jew, comes over and asks him directions. And he didn't know how to get to the other end of Washington Heights. We're talking 4 or 5 blocks away. Rebbe Shlomo, what are we talking about? But there was this schism, there was this chasm, which basically exists until today, although Baruch Hashem, YU is bigger, and the Yekka community is bigger, and there, Baruch Hashem, there is some people have broadened, there's been some Achleikas and Broyas, etc., etc., but it's a very interesting comment. But Rabbi Belkin knew in Washington Heights, you can shake any building and get a Rashi Yeshiva. Where do you get men who can go into the rabbinate, handle the rabbinate, not be compromised by the rabbinate? Remember, this was an era. Remember, we spoke about this. I think I mentioned it yesterday. YU was a feeder school, yeshiva college, for JTS. Okay? And here, Dr. Belkin made that decision that I have to continue in the rabbinate. And Baruch Hashem, I listened, I continued. Ultimately, it made me a much better Jew, Torah Jew, scholar, understanding people, understanding Sheilot, Halacha L'maisa. It honed me, it sharpened me. I'll just end off this point. I'm coming to the heart in a minute. But in 60, by 69, I was caught in a quagmire because Yeshiva wanted me full-time with teaching and the rabbinate wanted me full-time. In other words, I was caught with a quagmire because they wanted me to introduce American Jewish history in Stern College. Until today, I meet people who say to me, didn't you teach at Stern College? I say, never. I said, you heard a rumor that they were asking me by when an Aliyah. The rabbinate expanded, the shul expanded. They wanted me full time. They didn't want me to travel into the city every day to go from Maplewood to Washington Heights. But Baruch Hashem, my wife solved the problem, brought us La'alot Atzah Beriyah. But now I come to an amazing, amazing story which really privileged me in my relationship to Rav Shmuel Belkin. The mid-60s, I'm teaching my class at yeshiva. I'm teaching youngsters, kids of 14, 15, youngsters. I've taught on every level. In 59, I began elementary school, Talmud Torah. 62, YU was basically high school age. 69, Israel college age. And 76, 78, the Kollel, postgraduates. I've taught on every level. So you're teaching high school kids, which is the most important. Avram, that's the most important level for a Rebbe, you understand? Because you influence kids their entire life. I am still intimately friendly with students I taught. It's beginning with 62 through 69. Intimately friendly. And it's different than college already, less than postgraduate. It's the opposite. Your students want to influence you, not vice versa. So, Baruch Hashem. So, Alex, it's okay. I can stand the influence. I can withstand or stand. Take it as you wish. So, I'm teaching, and George Finkelstein was then an office boy, an errand boy for Mr. Abrams. George comes in, knocks on the door, comes into my class, hands me a note. Arnold, please come to my office immediately. NBA. That's the way he signed. So I asked George, take the class, I'll go downstairs, you know, all right, let him go into Chavrut or whatever. Yeah, I didn't ask George to stay. I told him to go into Chavrut and I'll go down to Mr. Abrams. Come down to Mr. Abrams, and he says to me, Arnold, Dr. Belkin wants to see you, to thank you. What you did was wonderful. I don't know what the heck they're talking about. I go into Dr. Belkin, and he embraces me, and he says, you don't know what you did for me yesterday. I look at him. Yesterday was Sunday. What did I do? I taught my class at Yeshiva and ran back to Maplewood. So Rabbi Belton says to me, and this reflects on the era, Yeshiva University still raised money by Pala meetings. Pala meetings are for secondary organizations, but Yeshiva University. But Pala meetings are Pala meetings. There was a Pala meeting on the Upper West Side. The featured speaker was, of course, Dr. Belkin. Here, these wealthy people are assembled in this beautiful apartment, and in walks a very famous lady, Mrs. Sarah Malka Manashevitz. The founder of Manashevitz was Reb Binyamin Manashevitz. He had a son, Tzvi Hirsch, whom he sent to Yerushalayim, where the family came from, to study here. When he came back to America to take over the family business, he needed a shidduch. There was one lady born in Cincinnati, where the plant was located at the time, who was an American-born lady, totally from, exactly like Mrs. Revel, the same type of story. And they made a shidduch for Tzvi Hirsch and Rebbetzin, or Mrs. Sarah Malka Manashevitz. By the way, Tzvi Hirsch had smicha too. And he went on to build, expand the Manashevitz factory plant. Yeah, I don't have to tell you what Manashevitz is, the most famous kosher brand name in the world, basically. Today, maybe Israel overtakes it, Osim, Tanuva. Forget about Israel. Outside of Israel, who didn't hear of Manashevitz? Tzvi Hirsch died, and Mrs. Sarah Malka was widowed. I knew her. She lived to be over 100. Died, I think, at 102 in a senior citizens. She walks into the room, everyone silent. This is a very famous lady. And she goes right over to Dr. Belkin in a high-pitched, perfect English voice, says, "Dr. Belkin, I want you to know that every morning when I wake up, I say Modani and I thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for two reasons. One, giving me back my life again, and two, for giving me Rabbi Rothkopf." And Rav Shmuel Belkin says to her, he tells me, he says, "Well, Ms. Manashevitz, I can understand giving back your life. What do you mean, Rabbi Rothkopf?" He says, "I have one grandson named after my late husband, Tzvi Hirsch. Rabbi Rothkopf turned him into a Ben Torah. I have tremendous nachat, and I thank God." And Dr. Belkin said to me, a moment later, I got up, I'm the guest speaker, and I said, "Morai v'rabotai," this is Dr. Belkin speaking now, "there is no need for me to make an appeal for the yeshiva. I don't have to mention one word about what we do. You just heard from Mrs. Manashevitz what the yeshiva is capable of doing. I need your help so instead of one Rabbi Rothkopf, we can raise a 100 Rabbi Rothkopfs." And Dr. Belkin told me, I never, ever had such a warm response. Ich komme ich adank. And boy, I walked out of there. I couldn't believe my ears. Kliyacha yad. Look what happened. And I wound up every year. I used to get a large case from Manashevitz of every product they made. Regular matzah, shmura matzah, whole wheat matzah, egg matzah. You should see the cotton that came in. Baruch Hashem, I love matzah, which I've put myself on a psychologist's couch already, and I've concluded Rakefet loves matzah because that is Jewish bread. And if I had my way, I would eat matzah all year. Just Erev Pesach would be the one day I wouldn't eat matzah. Lechem Mishnah matzah. Until today, my greatest treat is take a beautiful Pesach matzah put a piece of cheese on it, spread a little pizza, spice a little tomato, put it into the microwave for a minute and a half, and boy, you have a Jewish Italian treat in the full sense of the word. But that was now. This now comes back to haunt me. Watch. And it completes the cycle last May. What am I talking about? 1968, you all know the story. I told it already. Our salaries double, Mr. Joe Gris. We take the money. We leave our youngest daughter with my in-laws. We take the two older girls. And we visited Israel RCA tour for the first time. Malka and I vow we'll settle within 1 year. We're zeicha l'kayem et haneda. We come back 10 months later. But when we got back to America, I didn't want to tell anyone I'm going in Aliyah because you don't want to be a lame duck rabbi or a lame duck rebbe. So I didn't tell anyone. And I work with the Jewish agency. Turns out I get a job in Israel because I have a book under contract to JPS, the Encyclopedia Judaica, whatever. It's not important. And finally, by Pesach time, the world knows that I'm going in Aliyah. People are shocked. Leaving America, who goes in Aliyah? What Anglos went in Aliyah? There used to be an expression, only the lo yutzlachnikim, only the failures in America went in Aliyah at that time. And then comes June, the end of the year. Well, was it the end of May? No, it was June, I believe, already. And Rabbi Belkin makes a farewell dinner for me. And no one can understand what's happening. And he gets up at the dinner, and he says, and I quote, and after praising me and speaking, and all my colleagues are there, it was very nice, very warm, very emotional, and Rabbi Belkin says, and Dr. Rotkoff, I want you to know, whenever you will come back to America, there will always be a place for you in the yeshiva. And of course, what no one understood, but I understood. Number one, Rabbi Belkin was still repaying me, this was a public homage, in return for what I did with Tzvi Hirsch Manashevitz. He never forgot that. So he felt, now I can make a farewell dinner. Two, Dr. Belkin, along with the Rav, I'll put this into parentheses, no one could believe that a Rakefet or Rothkoff could go in Aliyah. What profession do I have? A Rebbe, I'm a Lamed. Big deal. You're not going to make it in Israel. You're not going to succeed in Israel. You're not going to find your niche in Israel. You're not going to find your place. You'll be coming back. We want you to know there will always be a place for you in the yeshiva. And now I add a postscript. Ani modeh l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I did come back officially, a guest of the yeshiva, invited, my wife, myself, our car fare paid for. We did come back so many years later, May 2014, but not hobos, not beggars. But we came back to be honored for what we accomplished. Alat Mat HaKodesh. I said this in public. We completed the cycle, but not the way Rabbi Belkin envisioned it, in a very different fashion. In parentheses, I say, the worst thing in the world was to accept COVID, because when I got back to Israel after 2 weeks, I gave 9 different shiurim. Don't ask what went on. And every time I told you, every time I was introduced, the titles got bigger and better. Harav, Harav Hagon, Harav Hagon HaTzadik, Harav Hagon HaTzadik, HaChosid, every after 2 weeks, everything went absolutely wrong. It was a terrible, terrible summer. Everything went wrong. So I plead to the Ribbono Shel Olam, no COVID, no Achmas Nefesh. Just keep it in the middle. balanced. But that's part of the relationship with Rabbi Belkin. But one more story that proves my analysis. And this is an unbelievable story, and I'll give you all the details. There was a businessman who made a fortune of money. His name was Rogozin. And like all business people, all successful balabatim, they have a critique against the rabbinic. And evidently, Rogozin felt that the rabbis aren't ethical enough. And this could very well be. I don't have to tell you. We've had scandal on top of scandal. I'll be giving a talk in Florida shortly on how do we know we can trust our rabbi at their request. I'm giving that talk. So scandal on top of scandal. Rogozin, who was giving heavy money to the yeshiva, decided to establish an institute for Torah ethics. Unbelievable. Heading it up would be Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, assisted the person running it on the ground, the Rav's son-in-law, Professor Yitzchak or Isidore Twesky of Harvard, Tona Rebbe. Fine. Dr. Belkin would sit in at meetings. And the institute began. 10 scholars would be chosen to do research in various fields that lead to ethical Torah behavior, and each scholar would get $1,000. Now, Rafi, you just think what $1,000 meant in 1968, okay? Put it into the terminology of money at that time. I think it's fair to say that it's like getting $10,000 today, okay? A house then costs $25,000. That same house today you can't look at for under half a mil. So I'm one of the 10 guys chosen, and I'm assigned the topic Dinah de Malchuta Dinah. If you're familiar with my Rakafet Aaron, I think it's Chelik Bet, it's a famous article that I published afterwards. It's an article that many, many times I've been asked for permission. It's been republished in a number of different places. Dinah de Malchuta Dinah. Why? That's ethical behavior. Observing the laws of the land, being a good citizen, being an upright citizen, paying your taxes, not cheating on the government. This is ethical behavior. Well, I knew I'm going in Aliyah. So I got to work. And I was the first one who finished his paper. Paper was then photocopied, distributed, and here we sit down, the 10 members of the Rogozin Institute of Ethics, Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Shmuel Belkin, Professor Isidore Twesky, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and they've all read my paper. We're now discussing it, making comments. And Rav Shmuel Belkin, I couldn't believe my ears. Here we are. This is, you know, obtuse material. It's a Rishonim and a Achronim. And when does, you know, Dinah Malchut, everyone knows this quote, Dinah Malchut. When does it apply? When doesn't it apply? What type of government? What type of laws? How far does it go? Does it Issa Veheta? Where do you draw the limits? Etc., etc. And suddenly, Rav Shmuel Belkin, looking at my paper, puts it down, and he starts quoting material. Within a half second, the president of the Yeshiva University became a Litvisha Ilui, Bucky Vacharef. I couldn't believe it. And this adds to my understanding of Rav Shmuel Belkin, that he never ceased to be the Litvisha Yeshiva boy, both in reality and above all in his own configuration, in his own mind, in his own gestalt. He was more president of Yeshiva University, but the the Litvisha Yeshivisha learning never left him. That was the basic gestalt of Dr. Belkin. Let me end off the story. I've never told this in public, but when you grow older, you decide, I can tell it all. Let me end off the story. Our Novi Yitzchak Tversky, who I knew quite well, a very fascinating individual, quiet, hard to pierce, yet an amazing individual. He is a kid. He never went to an advanced yeshiva. What was the high school called? Boys, the famous high school in Boston. Give me the name.
Boston Latin
School. That's the high school he went to, right? That was like Bronx High School of Science and even more, I understand. And Harvard University. He was a total Hasidic soul. It's unbelievable. Not like Reb Meir Tversky. Reb Meir Tversky already could be Talmud Rebbe. He's not Talmud Rebbe. He Taka was Talmud Rebbe. And professor at Harvard, head of the department. So I went over to him and I said, Professor Tversky, you know, I'm going in Aliyah. I need every penny that I can get. I came in Aliyah, I think, with a total of $14,000, if I recall correctly. So I said, well, I'll see what you can do. You have to revise the paper. I said, yeah, I'll revise it in Israel. I'll send it on to you. So a week before I left America, he gave me a check for $750. I revised it, sent on the paper. You should know, I was the only one who got a penny from the Rogozin Foundation. If you check the record books, go on the websites, you'll find out that in 1969, there was a tremendous setback on the stock market, recession. The Rogozin Foundation lost a fortune of money, and they could never make good on the initial pledge, and the Institute of Ethics died a very unethical death. And whenever I would meet Yitzchak in subsequent years, we would always joke around, you see, you went in Aliyah, you were rewarded. You're the only one who got a penny out of the foundation. Okay. So that's my take on Rabbi Belkin. I hope I'm right. I leave it to future generations. But that's my analysis. And I don't know. That's the way I felt. And I can never forget. We were sitting around already. This is in first hall. In like a lounge. Table. Chairs. The Rav. Rav Shmuel Belkin. Professor Tversky. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Aaron, by the way, was one of the scholars. I think he was one of the 10. And I still can see Reb Shmuel Belkin or Tekesef Mishnah. Yeah, and he's asking him this, and he's calling this and that. Wow. And I just heard a tape of him recorded in 67, talking to the YURA, giving a shiur. The Shvetzef Hashtein Avot, even English, Yiddish. But wow, the knowledge pours forth. Let me go a step further. I won't finish today. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. This is very hard for me now, very emotional. Among the people Rav Shmuel brought to the yeshiva, he brought an individual who had as much influence on me personally, on Yitzchak, as much almost as the Rav. Hard to take him out of my mind. I have his picture in my office. Reb Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessin. Lessin spelled L-E-S-I-N. His years 1889-1975. I remember the funeral yet was in Geula. I believe also it began in Chevron. Chevron was still located there. I don't think it had moved here yet. And that's where the funeral began. Who is Rav Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessen? He was born in the Minsk district. He studied in Slabodka for 7 years. And he became very attached to Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel, the Alt of Slabodka, the Mashgiach, the founder of Slabodka, the man who guided Slabodka. Talmud, he yet saw Reb Yisrael Salanter, but Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel was basically third generation. He was a Talmud of the Alt of Kelm. He was a Talmud of Reb Simcha Zissel. He had knew Reb Naftali Amsterdam. He knew Reb Yitzchak Blaza. Even though he saw Reb Yisrael Salanter, but I would essentially call him third generation. Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel was evidently an educator par excellence. And the people he developed in Slabodka later changed the course of Torah in America. You're talking about Reb Aaron Kotler, Reb Reuven Grzebski, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, Reb Yitzchak Kutna. As a matter of fact, where Nosson Kamenetsky has a description in Making of a Gadol, where unfortunately he doesn't give all the details, he hides part of it. But I think it was in relation to, I'm guessing, because he doesn't give us the details, but evidently they went to Reb Moshe Feinstein to plead with Reb Moshe to be more strident and come out against the Rav in the whole controversy over the mixed board of rabbis over United Synagogue 1956. And they didn't get anywhere with Reb Moshe. He remained Reb Moshe. He agreed with them, but not to go out and make a tremendous machloket with his cousin and with the modern Orthodox, so-called modern Orthodox world. And when they walked out of the meeting with Reb Moshe, it's reported that Reb Kutna said, "You see, if you didn't learn in Slabodka, you didn't know how to be a manhig hadar." And the Reb Moshe didn't learn in Slabodka, but everyone else, Reb Ruderman, Slabodka, everyone else was Slabodka. And what was Slabodka? And here you have to understand, when you develop new ideas, let's take Hasidus. You take Hasidus, all right? Everyone agrees that the Baal Shem Tov was the founder of Hasidus. Everyone agrees that in the second generation, Reb Dov Baer, the Maggid of Medrash, continued. And then you start splitting and splitting and splitting and splitting. So you see, in Hasidus today, you have Lubavitch, the whole world, Tanya, Likutei Sicha, the whole world of literature. The last Lubavitcher Rebbe, how many volumes have been published already? Hundreds and hundreds of volumes. Every word he said was recorded. Every word was videoed afterwards. Endless volumes have been republished in English, in Hebrew, in Yiddish. All right, then you have Satmar. Satmar is a world unto itself. Then you have Bells. Then you have Ger, Gur, a world unto itself. You have so many different approaches to Hasidus today. All right, now you go back. Rav Yisrael Salanter founded the Musa movement. The second generation was already very close to Rav Yisrael, but already different schools of thought started to develop. Then already you take the third generation and you have the tremendous chasm. Shiflut Adam versus Gadlut Adam. Rabbi Yisrael Horowitz, Nevadak, Shiflut Adam. Mark, what is Shiflut Adam? Shiflut Adam was very powerful. If you were studying in Nevadak and I was your Rebbe, I would say to you, here is 10 ruble, go into a drugstore and ask them for 2 kilos of potatoes. No, yeah, you hear that? What's this? Insanity? What am I doing in a drugstore, friend? What am I asking for potatoes in a drugstore? It's not insanity at all. This is unbelievably smart, intelligent. Because you're living in a world 120, 130 years ago. Everyone is laughing at Yiddishkeit. It's old-fashioned. That's motives. It's terrible. The rabbis control the people. You're a slave. It's a new world. Join the world. Anarchism, socialism, Bundesism, communism. A new world is dawning. Lenin lived. Lenin will live. Lenin lives forever. Rebbeinu Shlomo, a Jew wrote that. Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem Yimloch, Leonam Vahed. Who else wrote that if not a Jew? Every kid, beautiful, wonderful. The center of the world is man. God no longer exists. God is dead. And that was the world which you went out into. You need a lot of courage not to be swept away by that world. Engels was a yeshiva bucker in his youth. Marx came from Gedolei Yisrael. What are we talking about? Trotsky, Baruch Hashem, Izaycha, grandchildren, great-grandchildren living in Chevron. Trotsky, could you imagine? Bornstein, that's the original name, Lev Bornstein. He was Zaycha, Baruch Hashem. In order to withstand that pressure, Mark, you have to have the ability to go into a drugstore and ask for 2 kilo of potatoes, and they'll laugh at you, and they'll mock you, and they'll decry you, and all that goes with it. And you walk out, and you laugh at them. Oh, when you develop that ability, it's very important to have that ability. So I don't want you to put down shiflet adam. Shiflet adam, you see, prima facie, people today hear shiflet adam. What are they, morons? What are they, crazy? You understand me, Moshe? Shiflet adam had depth to it. Today you need a little bit shiflet adam. Believe me, it would help withstand some of the pressures upon us. But then there was, Slabodka went on a different shita altogether. Kadlata adam. Take a look. Rakefet put on a tie, put on a suit. Look, smart, elegant. Shave properly. No beards allowed. The latest fashions. You are a creature in the image of the Almighty. You have great ability. Don't shame the Tzelem Elohim within you by sinning, by leaving the fold. Develop your ability. Develop your greatness. You are a servant and a savant of the Almighty. You are continuing the brilliant tradition of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Oh, Gadlata Adam, Mi Ka'amcha Yisrael, Gai Echad Ba'aretz. Why is man created? Not just to eat and drink and make money. You are created to do good, to do chesed, to care about your fellow Jew, to care about your fellow human beings. What Gadlat HaDam, what the altar instilled in his students. And he knew how to do it. He was a fabulous machanech. You see that from all the memoir literature. I don't know, again, can we agree with everything he did? But remember when I raised the issue when he withheld the letters from Rabban Kutla. His sister sends him letters, and the letters never reach the Rebaran. All right? It's a questionable practice. I don't say I would ever do it, or I would encourage my students, chas v'chalila. You have to have trust in people. But take a look. Rebaran Kutler became Rebaran Kutler because he never got those letters from his student, from his sister. Look at it that way. Imagine how he got, had he gotten the letters, who knows what would have happened to him. Okay, Reb Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson, worship the ground the altar walked on. And if you knew Rav Lessen, you always had a feeling there was a tzel, an image in him, a shadow of the Alter Slabodka, immaculately dressed, always dignity. You felt when you saw the Mashgiach, you were back in Slabodka. And it's fascinating. Now, many of the students at Yeshiva laughed. You understand, these are kids, we're talking the 40s, talking the 50s. Came to the Yeshiva in 1944. I'll give you a little background about him in a minute. I won't even have enough time, but he came to the Yeshiva in 44. Many of the students laughed. I remember the Mashgiach once gave a shmuis in the Yeshiva, and he said, I heard that some students go to movies. And, you know, he gave a whole little discourse. And remember, movies then were not like today. Today, mamish, you can't go to a movie. I mean, it's beyond words. I always wondered how my grandchildren learned these terrible curse words. Thank God they have enough seichel as they grow older not to use them. But if someone recommended a movie to my wife, I couldn't believe the language. You know, it's like walking through the streets of New York. You walk through, you hear them say, well, what the dash, that. It's an adjective, it's a noun, it's an adverb, it's just unbelievable. It's the way people speak to movies. Who heard of people parading around naked? How do you parade around naked in a movie? It's beyond comprehension. And then you'll meet an actress or you'll meet an actor and they'll worry, Taka. Their great children are going to watch this movie. They're going to have children, have a grandchildren 10 years, 20 years from now. This is your mother, this is your grandmother. It's beyond words. We're a world. It's like a zoo. The animals don't wear clothes and humans don't wear clothes. But movies, and the only movies I ever want to see are black and white movies out of the 30s and the 40s. There were once movies, where movies were respectable, were dignified, had a message, had a plot, had a theme. God have mercy what you see today. So the Mashgiach made a comment, and this was in the 50s. So, you know, students walked out laughing, but there were a hardcore, a chosen few, who could, all right, he doesn't understand America totally. He wasn't born here. He wasn't raised here. But we're here to get from him Slabodka. And the influence he had on some of us is indescribable. Ich bin ein Mensch, das ist not so mit dem Mashgiach. And I don't want to translate it. Okay? If you understand, you understand. If not, it doesn't matter. Now, let me clue you in. Mashgiach, how did he get here? He was a fabulous fundraiser. People related to him as a fundraiser. And he did wonders in Europe. He was in America. And I'll go into more detail next week. In the mid-20s, fundraising for Slabodka. He knew how to fundraise. He knew how to reach out to people. He knew how to speak. He was a fabulous speaker, filled with depth, in Yiddish, of course. The Musa of Reb Natan Zvi Finkel, he could take Reb Natan Zvi's approach and translate it into tens of thousands of written pages on Tanakh, on every Agada in Chazal. He had a docile pen and a very seminal mind. 39, he was fundraising for Slabodka. That saved his life. He wound up in America. And that saved his life. What did he do in America? He was Rav in the New England area. Again, all over America at that time, there were shuls built by East European immigrants who were no longer Shomer Shabbos, who did keep kosher, whatever kashrut was available at that time, but they did keep kosher, but their souls still longed for the East European rabbinate. They couldn't be fooled yet by conservative or reform chas v'chalila. It was, they were still Europäische Menschen. Their children already built the conservative movement. And they needed Rabbanim like this, and he was a Rav in the Massachusetts area. And because he was a Rav in the Massachusetts area, he got to know Rav Soloveitchik. They got to know each other. And once Rav Soloveitchik knew him, the Rav highly recommended him to Rabbi Belkin to become the Mashgiach. And that's how Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson comes to the yeshiva. It is basically a synthesis between the Rav and Rav Lesson from the Massachusetts area. And as Rabbi Belkin is expanding the yeshiva, and remember, we're talking 1944, he's now brought in Rabbi David Lifshitz, Rabbi Ruchem Gerelich, Rabbi Noach Bornstein. He's inherited from Rabbi Revel the two Telzer. Rabbi Revel was a Telzer in your language, a Telzer in the way they spoke, Rabbi Shmuel Volk, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Honest. And the whole yeshiva, you're getting in the best that the Litvisha world has to offer, that has run away from Europe or trapped in America, and he recommends Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson to Rabbi Belkin, and in 44, he's officially appointed the Mashgiach of the yeshiva. Now, I want to say something else and end off the class, and this is something that Yitzchak and I saw with our own eyes. Rav Lesson would make it a point of every few months coming into every class in the yeshiva. I would say it was 4 times a year. Beginning, and the yeshiva then was one unit. It was yeshivas, Rav Tzolkhanan, beginning with the youngest kids. I still had the privilege when I was a Rosh Yeshiva, he would address my students. The same Rav Lesson who addressed me when I was a kid. Beginning with the youngest class and going all the way up to the Smicha students. You should know that when Rav Lesson came in to speak in the Rav Shia, the Rav would move over, sit down among the students and listen to the entire talk that Rav Lesson gave. It was a sight. Am I right, Yitzchak? Do you remember this? A sight to see the derech eretz that the Rav had for him. At the time, I couldn't totally comprehend it because the Rav, when he spoke, was very dramatic. When I grew older and I started to study Rav Lesson's Svarim, the depth that the man had, how he could take a Maimar Chazal and turn it into a contemporary message of Katlat HaDam, the greatness of man, the Avot, and the you know, today in Israel, the whole Machloket, Begova Inayim, how do you study Tanakh, and how do you study the Avot Shalanu? And he would explain with Vata that these people were so great that the slightest misdeed was considered a sin. For ordinary, it did not. And you see all his writings. But what's beautiful about that, it gave you something to strive for, something to recognize that you're a Ben Torah, you're a Ben Yeshiva, you have studied Shas and Paiskim. You have to be different. You have to be careful. You have to be medak. I can still remember the Mashgiach saying, I never forgot this, that on Shabbos, the davening dafsein anderesh. It's a different davening Shabbos. And you would talk about Slobodka, that during the week, yes, they daven with Kavana, but it was a weekday davening. Shabbos, it has to be different. There was just, he lived, the air that he was breathing was partially Washington Heights air, but a good deal of it was still from the oxygen he brought with him from Slavata. All right, this leads us with a bombshell of next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, the Mashgiach, his son-in-law, the 1923 visit, 24 visit to America, the pushcarts. There's a world to talk about, and I'll actually show you something very interesting, one of his published svarim, and I'll also show you when Reb Nissim Kamenetsky chops off the head of Aaron Rakefet in scholarship, and Aaron Rakefet says Reb Nissim is more correct than he is. Not that I'm totally wrong, but Reb Nissim, more correct. Modela Emet. Yes, yes, Chak.
I think the next project, now that you got the DVD done, is to have republish the works of Reb
Nissim. You're asking an interesting question. Rabbi Rubin says that now that we got the DVD done on the rub, it's already ancient history. These people probably never even saw the Lodi Manifest. It's available all over. Yeah, you can buy it off of the internet. I had to buy it. I don't have the rights to it. It's the I found the producer. Don't ask what I went through.
Can I borrow a copy?
Yeah, you can borrow a copy from me. Yeah, you can borrow a copy. It just can't be. I don't know what the rules are about showing it in public.
They're no, already.
But you can watch it yourself. It's not a problem. But it can be bought. The better, the newer edition with more to it, where I'm in it, there was a whole discussion group afterwards, that you have to buy from the producer. But there's a website, The Lonely Man of Faith. He was outstanding. You know, I found him, but it's like, this is what God created him for that. Now I understand he's doing weddings. I don't know, it's not no big deal to do weddings, but to do a documentary on the Rub, on the level he did it, was fabulous. It's a whole story, it's not for now. Okay. My dear students, what did we do today? We dealt with Rakefet's relationship with Rav Shmuel Belkin. Why I think the way I do, I may be right, I may be wrong. The facts are facts. The stories I told you actually happened. The interpretation, it's open to question, but that's the way I understood it. We then moved into Rav Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lesson, but we have quite a bit to do on him, Be'ezrat HaNotein Liyov Koach. Now next, Yitzchak, I made for you a copy of the English, here, you're going to go to England. We dealt with England yesterday, and it's, thank God Shmuley Segel is in the class. So you'll see, you'll be able to see it with your own eyes. But next week, Sunday, is one of the most fascinating shiurim ever. First of all, I'm dealing with the Air Force bases, and Yehuda V'Shomron, and then I'm sailing into a volume that is as entertaining as it is halachic. Basically, it's by I'm going to ask the class who he is. We'll get information already from people listening on YU Torah, and it's a Chassidish Rebbe of some sorts, about 125 reasons why we need an Eruv. Now, the freebies, 1 second. This, if anyone wants, this was left in the room from yesterday. This is Koren Publishing. I cannot believe all the works they are publishing in Hebrew, English, and French. And again, I state I was born before my time. What can I tell you? You people have all of Shas and Peskim as your fingertips. I want to recommend the book to you. I can't give it away. I need it. I'm going to give a talk on this in Florida. Baseball as a Road to God by John Sexton, the president of NYU, who I believe is a Catholic, and he writes about his Jewish children, his Jewish grandchildren, who knows what goes on in America. But this guy knows. It could be his children be married Jews and became Balei Tshuva. He writes about Mincha. He writes about Maariv. He writes about the Passover Seder. And I have to say, it's chaval, he didn't hear my eulogy for Joe DiMaggio, or he would have had another 100 pages for the book. But I highly recommend it. I understand it just came out. It's a bestseller in the United States sometime. No, let him contact me. I don't have to. What am I trying to think? I'm trying to convert him to Judaism. But I recommend the book. And if anyone is a baseball fan here, this is a selection of articles on baseball. If anyone's interested, you're welcome to it. This is something about the book I just told you about, The Path to God. Now, again, I want to mention what I mentioned yesterday. It's beyond belief what's happened to the conservative movement. Rabbi Wesley Gartenschwartz backs off controversial plan for intermarriages. This is a conservative rabbi who a few weeks ago came out in favor of conservative rabbis performing intermarriages. That doesn't bother me as much as this. This just came out this past week. It was in every Israeli newspaper. NCSY, United Synagogue Conservative, USY, excuse me, United Synagogue and Chas V'Chalion, United Synagogue Conservative Judaism's Youth Movement ends interdating ban. No comment necessary. And the NC and United Synagogue Youth, USY, was always the most observant part of the conservative movement. It is hard to believe. The New York Times, I can't believe what they pick up. In Brooklyn, racing against the Shabbat clock at King's Highway Glot. Beautiful article. There's one paragraph in here that greatly upsets Rakefet. See if you can figure out why. Because the people who opened it are Yordim from Israel. And I don't like Yordim. I like Olim. Circumcision. This is from the New York Times. They want teenagers who haven't been circumcised to be circumcised. The medical benefits of circumcision. Hard to believe where we're at, okay? And you still have people yelling. It's in the article that you're harming the child. It's an operation without his permission. If anyone's interested in Rav David Lifshitz, Moshe sent me more information about Rav David. It's almost like a Hasidic story here. And finally, most important, the OU is running a Hanukkah sale. And the works of Rabbi Aaron Rakefet, three major works, I don't want to read the whole thing, it's not nice, but three major works, Revel, Silva, and Washington, for under $60. Grab it! It is a bargain. I want to hear that the OU is all sold out, and they might even consider a second printing. Not for Rakefet's sake, believe me, but to know who Rabbi Rebbe was, Rabbi Silva was, and without Washington to Washington, you do not know how to breathe air properly. Until we meet again in health and happiness in their classes next Sunday and Monday, don't forget, Besorah Tova, Yeshuot V'Nechamot, Aleinu V'Al Kol Yisrael, Das V'Danya. Thank you. I better not say das v'danya, I'll be arrested. I take it back. Lehitraot, avidusen. Ciao.
So is the OU having this in Israel too?
No, but you have to get the website. You have to contact the website. In Israel.
Pay the shipping.
If they have to ship it, it's like this way.
You know, when I started eating matzah for the first time, all I wanted was the matzah pizza.
Okay, you heard my recipe.
Yep.
My recipe. Baruch Hashem.
You know a Brooklyn rabbi who went back to Slovakia, don't you?
You're talking about Rabbi Miller. I'm going to talk about him next week. Next week is that's Rabbi Lessen's son-in-law. Next week.
Yeah, we just told you. I don't think there was anybody during his lifetime that gave more shiurim.
We know. We're going to talk about him next week. He was right 90% of the time.
You'll be here next week.
And Rav Hashem. So I'm saying, where do you live?
Passaic.
I was just in Passaic last summer. I was just there last summer. I spoke with Ron Eisenman shul.
Yes.
And another shul, Baruch Hashem. Yisrael. Yeah.